Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. It's Monday, November 9th, 2015. It was on this day in 1989 that communist-controlled East Germany opened checkpoints in the Berlin Wall, permitting its citizens to travel to West Germany. This event would lead to the reunification of East and West Germany and the end of communism in Eastern Europe. Today on As It Is, we'll tell you about a World Health Organization report that says eating processed meats like bacon, hot dogs, and ham can cause cancer. Then, we will tell you about a suggestion from an economics professor in China that men share their wives with men who can't find their own. And later, as we always do on Mondays, we will bring you the technology report with Jonathan Evans. And then, as we do every weekday, we will present The Making of a Nation with Steve Ember. So, you can see, we have a lot for you today. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English because we exist to help you learn everyday American English. We speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. World Health Organization experts say eating processed meat can cause cancer. Processed meat is meat that has been preserved by curing, salting, smoking, drying, or canning. Ashley Thompson now with the report on the WHO findings.
Experts from the WHO's International Agency for Research on Cancer, or IARC, in Lyon, France, studied 800 cases. IARC researchers linked processed meat, such as hot dogs and ham, to bowel cancer, as well as pancreatic cancer and prostate cancer. The IARC has included processed meat in its Group 1 list, for which there is sufficient evidence of links to cancer. Tobacco, asbestos, and diesel fumes are also on the Group 1 list. WHO experts also called red meat, including beef, lamb, and pork, probably carcinogenic to humans. Dr. Kurt Strafe is with the IARC. He said in a statement that the risk of cancer increases with the amount of meat a person eats. A person who consumes 50 grams of processed meat per day, about 2 pieces of bacon, increases his or her risk of bowel cancer by 18%. Health experts in some countries already advise against eating large amounts of red and processed meat. But those advisories had been centered on the increased risks of heart disease and obesity. Meat industry groups are protesting the WHO study. They say that meat is part of a balanced diet. They also say the causes of cancer are broad and include environmental and lifestyle factors. The WHO report cited the Global Burden of Disease Project, which estimates that diets high in processed meat lead to 34,000 cancer deaths per year worldwide. I'm Ashley Thompson.
An economics professor in China has suggested that Chinese men share their wives with men who can't find their own. Anna Mateo explains.
This idea comes from Xie Zuoshi, a professor at the School of Economics and International Trade at Zhejiang University of Finance and Economics. Mr. Xie says China has a population imbalance between men and women. This imbalance, he adds, has left about 30 million adult men without wives. Mr. Xie said if we stick to the moral idea of monogamy, we would be condemning 30 million men to a life of misery without wives and children. His call for wife sharing brought him lots of criticism. Tens of thousands criticized his idea in social media. They say Mr. Xie's proposal is immoral and an insult to women. A teacher in Beijing, Yu Baoyu, says the professor is treating women as if they are a product that a husband can share or rent. This teacher adds, "I am surprised he has the audacity or nerve to say such things in public." Others said online that if Mr. Xie thinks it is such a good idea, he should share his own wife. However, Mr. Xie is a professor of economics and is looking at the numbers. He says his idea is meant mostly for low-income families. Most of the men unable to find wives, he adds, do not make much money. Mr. Xie says those who criticize him are missing his moral point, that 30 million bachelors are in a difficult situation. Many blame China's one-child policy for the imbalance in China's male-to-female ratio. Chinese officials have recently begun the process of changing China's one-child policy. I'm Anna Mateo.
That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Technology Report with Jonathan Evans and The Making of a Nation with Steve Ember are coming up next. We want to hear what interests you, so please tell us what you want to hear about. Our email address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. I know I say it every week, but it's true. We read every message you send us. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the VOA Learning English Branch in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Many people around the world suffer from dust-related allergies. People with allergies have trouble breathing or suffer from tightness in the chest and shortness of breath. Most allergies result mainly from very small creatures called dust mites. Dust mites live in bedding. Now, scientists in Poland say they have successfully tested cloth that the microscopic creatures cannot pass through. Most of us share our beds with thousands of dust mites. Each mite is just 1/3 of a millimeter wide. Along with dust around the home, we breathe in waste from these creatures. Mite droppings contain enzymes called proteases. Enzymes produce chemical reactions in the body. Proteases can cause allergic reactions like breathlessness, coughing, or severe asthma attacks. Dust mites are hard to remove because they can easily pass through small openings in bedding. But that is not the case with the new fabric developed at the Medical University of Łódź in Poland. The fabric stops the mites, but it still lets air pass through the material. Allergy sufferers who tested the cloth say the allergic symptoms were reduced up to 70%. They told the researchers that they can finally sleep normally. Up until now, they could not even lie in their beds because they suffered from asthma attacks and also had trouble breathing and watery eyes. Researchers say repeated washing did not reduce the anti-allergic quality of the new fabric. They expect that after additional testing, it will be ready for the market. Some people do not like being separated from their telephone, even while enjoying a restful holiday at the beach. So, a university student from Lebanon developed a most unusual beach mat. The device both provides power to cell phones and keeps drinks cool. 23-year-old Antoine Saya designed the water-resistant mat he calls Beach Chill. The device can be used to recharge electronic devices. The mat also has refrigeration equipment that can keep drinks cool. Antoine Saya began selling the Beach Chill on social media for $150. He says he has been surprised at the reaction worldwide. He adds that some people like the mat because it is lightweight and easy to carry. Rita Matthew purchased one of the Beach Chills. "When I am on the beach, I used to always look around for a charger and never managed to find any, and the water never stays cool," she says. "So the Beach Chill mat is great and has everything in it, even a pocket where I can put a book." The product can also be used in other places, like around the house, swimming pools, and on boats.
And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Jonathan Evans. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On a cold and cloudy day in March of 1861, Abraham Lincoln became the 16th President of the United States. In his inaugural speech, the new president announced the policy that he would follow toward the southern states that had left the Union. Lincoln said no state had a legal right to secede. The Union could not be broken. He said he would enforce federal laws in every state. And he promised not to surrender any federal property in the states that seceded. Lincoln said if force was necessary to protect the Union, then force would be used. His policy was soon tested. This week in our series, Jack Weitzel and Jack Moyles discuss the dispute over the federal base that was being built at Fort Sumter.
On his second day as president, Lincoln received some bad news from Fort Sumter at Charleston, South Carolina. Major Robert Anderson, the commander of the small United States force at Sumter, wrote that his food supplies were low. At most, said Anderson, there was enough food for 40 days. Unless he and his men received more supplies, they would have to leave the fort. Lincoln wanted to keep Fort Sumter. It was one of the few United States forts in the South still held by federal forces. And he had promised not to give up any federal property in the states that seceded.
But getting food to Fort Sumter would be a very difficult job. The fort was built on an island in Charleston Harbor. It was surrounded by southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the port. To get supplies to Anderson and his men, a ship would have to fight its way to Sumter. Such a battle was sure to begin a bitter civil war. There also was the danger that fighting would cause slave states still in the Union to secede and join the Southern Confederacy.
The Army Chief, General Scott, warned Lincoln that it was too late to get supplies to Fort Sumter. He said Southern defenses around the fort were so strong that a major military effort would be necessary. He said it would take months to prepare the warships and soldiers for such an effort. Major Anderson and his men at Sumter, he said, could not wait that long. There was another plan, however, that might work. It was proposed to Lincoln by Captain Gustavus Fox of the Navy Department. Captain Fox said soldiers and supplies could be sent down to Charleston in ships. Outside the entrance to the harbor, on a dark night, they could be put into small boats and pulled by tugs to the fort. Fox said a few warships could be sent to prevent southern gunboats from interfering.
Lincoln liked this plan. He asked his cabinet for advice. If it were possible to send supplies to Sumter, he asked, would it be wise to do so? Postmaster General Blair was the only member of the cabinet to answer yes. Treasury Secretary Chase was for the plan only if Lincoln was sure it would not mean war. Secretary of State Seward and the others opposed it. They said it would be better to withdraw Major Anderson and his men. They felt that now was not the time to start a civil war. This opposition in the cabinet caused Lincoln to postpone action on the Fox plan. But he sent two men separately to Charleston to to get him information on the situation there. One was Captain Fox. The other was a close friend, Ward Lamon.
In Charleston, Fox met with Governor Pickens. He explained that he wished to talk with Major Anderson, not to give him orders, but to find out what the situation really was. Governor Pickens agreed. A Confederate boat carried Fox to Sumter. Anderson told Fox that the last of the food would be gone on April 15th. Ward Lamon went to Charleston after Fox returned to Washington. He, too, met with Governor Pickens and Major Anderson. The South Carolina governor asked Lamon to give Lincoln this message. Nothing can prevent war except a decision by the President of the United States to accept the secession of the South. If an attempt is made to put more men in Fort Sumter, a war cry will be sounded from every hilltop and valley in the South. Lamon reported to Lincoln that the arrival of even a boatload of food at Sumter would lead to fighting.
At the end of March, Lincoln held another cabinet meeting and again asked what should be done about Fort Sumter. Should an attempt be made to get supplies to Major Anderson? This time, three members of the cabinet voted yes, and three voted no. When the meeting ended, Lincoln wrote an order for the Secretary of War. He told him to prepare to move men and supplies by sea to Fort Sumter. He said they should be ready to sail as early as April 6th, only 1 week away.
On April 4th, Lincoln called Captain Fox to the White House. He told him that the government was ready to take supplies to Fort Sumter. He said Fox would lead the attempt. Lincoln showed Fox a message he was sending to Governor Pickens in South Carolina. It read, "This is to inform you that an attempt will be made to supply Fort Sumter with food only. If this attempt is not opposed, no effort will be made to throw in men, arms, or ammunition." Governor Pickens received the message on April 8th. He immediately sent it by telegraph to Confederate President Jefferson Davis at Montgomery, Alabama. Davis called a meeting of his cabinet to discuss what should be done. He asked if Fort Sumter should be seized before supplies could arrive.
Former United States Senator Robert Toombs of Georgia was the Confederate Secretary of State. He told Davis, "Firing upon that fort will begin a civil war greater than any the world has ever seen. I cannot advise you." Later in the meeting, Toombs urged Davis not to attack the fort. "Mr. President," he said, "at this time, it is suicide, murder, and will lose us every friend in the North. You will strike a hornet's nest which extends from mountains to oceans. Millions now quiet will swarm out and sting us to death. It is not necessary. It puts us in the wrong. It will kill us."
On April 10th, Jefferson Davis sent his decision to the Confederate commander at Charleston, General Pierre Beauregard. He told Beauregard to demand the surrender of Fort Sumter. If Major Anderson refused, then the general was to destroy the fort. The surrender demand was carried to Sumter the next day by a group of Confederate officers. They said Anderson and his men must leave the fort, but they could take with them their weapons and property. And they were offered transportation to any United States port they named.
Anderson rejected the demand. As he walked with the Confederate officers back to their boat, he asked if General Beauregard would open fire on Sumter immediately. No, they said. He would be told later when the shooting would start. Anderson then told the Southerners, "If you do not shell us to pieces, hunger will force us out in a few days." General Beauregard informed the Confederate government in Montgomery that Anderson refused to surrender. He also reported the major's statement that Sumter had only enough food for a few more days.
New orders were sent to Beauregard. Jefferson Davis said there was no need to attack the fort if hunger would soon force the United States soldiers to leave. But he said Anderson must say exactly when he and his men would leave. And he said Anderson must promise not to fire on Confederate forces. If Anderson agreed to this, then Confederate guns would remain silent. This offer was carried to Fort Sumter a few minutes before midnight, April 11th. Anderson discussed the offer with his officers and then wrote his answer. He would leave the fort on April 15th if the Confederates made no hostile act against Fort Sumter or against the United States flag. He would not leave, however, if before then he received new orders or supplies.
This did not satisfy the three Confederate officers who brought Beauregard's message. They handed Anderson a short note. It said, "We have the honor to inform you that General Beauregard will open fire on Fort Sumter in 1 hour at 20 minutes after 4 on the morning of April 12, 1861. The major shook hands with Beauregard's representatives and they left the fort. Anderson and his officers woke their men and told them to prepare for battle. At Fort Johnson, across the harbor, Confederate gunners also were getting ready. These men would fire the first shot at Sumter. That explosion would signal the other guns surrounding the fort to open fire.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Jack Weitzel and Jack Moyles. You can find transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can follow us at twitter.com/voalearnenglish. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English. Thank you.